It's the State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There are four lawsuits challenging December's lame duck session of the legislature. There's a lot to keep track of as these lawsuits work their way through the courts. And we know that some of the lawsuit laws that limit the powers of Governor Tony Evers went back into effect last week when an appeals court overruled a Dane County judge. Your questions about the litigation and its impact, they're welcome at 800-642-1234. Do you think the lame duck legislation should stand as is, or should it all be struck down? Why or why not? How do you feel about Wisconsin pulling out of the lawsuit against the Affordable Care Act? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We have Laurel White by our side. She is Wisconsin Public Radio State Capitol reporter and co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. Laurel, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I always laugh when State House reporters say they've turned into court reporters, but it seems like this could be a very fair statement to make. Yes. At present day, there is a lot of litigation involving state politics. So let's break this down. First, lame duck laws were blocked, then reinstated. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the suit before Dane County Circuit Judge Richard Neese. What was that lawsuit claiming and how did he rule?
So I can't believe it, but it was just a week ago today that there was a hearing in this case. This case was a procedural argument. So basically what happened was this wasn't a week ago today. That was a different case. But regardless, I'll tell you what happened in it. So this was a procedural argument where essentially plaintiffs were arguing that lawmakers didn't have the authority to call a special session to begin with, because the power to call a special session, which is a time when lawmakers want to get together that's not on their regularly scheduled, you know, kind of session time, isn't prescribed in the state constitution. It's something that's written into rules. And so plaintiffs in this lawsuit argued because that power isn't ascribed in the state constitution, lawmakers didn't have the authority to call this special session that became the lame duck. And so therefore, everything that is done under this purview should be considered unconstitutional and invalid.
What actions did Governor Evers take in response to this ruling right away?
Mm-hmm. So when Judge Neese agreed with that argument and struck down the entire lame duck session, all of the laws passed within it, all of the appointments made within it, Governor Evers was pretty quick to act on one thing in particular, and it's something that's probably not surprising to people that have been watching state politics. He moved to withdraw Wisconsin from a multi-state lawsuit challenging the Affordable Care Act. That was something that Governor Evers campaigned on, something that he was planning on doing, but Republican lawmakers during the lame duck session passed a restriction on his power to do that. Essentially, he would have to get approval from a panel of state lawmakers to move forward with that. That was a layer of control for lawmakers that wasn't there before under Governor Walker. So when that lame duck layer of power was stripped away, Governor Evers was quick to say, we're going to withdraw from this lawsuit. So he directed Attorney General Josh Call to do so, and Call got that process going.
So the judge rules the lame duck legislation unconstitutional because of this extraordinary session. And this wasn't Wisconsin's first session of this kind. Do we know if this ruling would impact the laws passed during previous extraordinary sessions?
So Judge Neese said in his ruling that this was intended only to affect the December 2018 extraordinary session. The argument of his decision having an effect on a multitude of other special sessions is something that defendants in the case have really pointed out. There have been about two dozen of these sessions since 1980. They've done obviously a variety of things. A number of different bills have been passed during these sessions. And so they said, if you invalidate this form of gathering of state lawmakers that's been happening for 40 years, look at all these laws that are going to be struck down. But Judge Neese said, nope, I'm limiting my decision. This isn't something that's going to be affected. Now, that could change as this decision has been appealed. An appellate court could say this argument applies too broadly and this would have too much of an effect. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in future arguments in court.
So how did Republican leaders respond to this ruling? What actions did they take?
So they did file an appeal very quickly. They filed an appeal to the District 3 Court of Appeals in Wisconsin, which is in central Wisconsin. It's based in Wausau. What's interesting about the appeals process for these cases is that Republican lawmakers have passed a law fairly recently that allows them to appeal this kind of case anywhere they want in the state. So folks were kind of keeping an eye on where they chose to file this appeal. There was some thought about it being potentially filed, in the suburban Milwaukee area. But they did decide to go ahead and go with Wausau. Remarkable as well. I know this is kind of down in the details, but the two judges that are sitting on that Milwaukee area court where they could have filed the appeal are both running for the state Supreme Court, Lisa Neubauer and Brian Hagedorn. So if they had filed the appeal there, that could have had political implications for those candidates.
So they filed in Wausau, mm-hmm. and basically the judge said, no, keep lame duck session laws as is?
That's right. So this was a panel of three judges, which was how that was decided in the appellate court. And basically what they said is we are going to fulfill Republican lawmakers' request for what's called a stay of the lower court's ruling. So basically they said, we are going to put a halt on the previous ruling. It doesn't need to be enforced while we're waiting for our arguments and our case to move forward. So they have set briefing deadlines for the plaintiffs and defendants in this case. They need to file all those papers by the end of this month, the end of April, officially. So that's going to be moving forward with arguments, but they haven't made a final decision yet. They've just agreed to put a stay in place, so Judge Neese's decision doesn't need to be enforced.
Talking with Laurel White, she's WPR State Capitol reporter. You can join in. Do you think the lame duck legislation should be left as is, or should it all be struck down? Why or why not? What questions do you have about these court cases? How do you feel about Wisconsin pulling out of the lawsuit against the Affordable Care Act? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Laurel, last Monday, another judge heard another case against the lame duck legislation. What brought this case and what are they claiming?
So this is the case that was heard a week ago today. This is a case that's focused more on some of the specific laws that are passed or that were passed during the lame duck session. It says that they violate the separation of powers guarantee within the state constitution. So some of the things that were passed during the lame duck session, as we've talked about, are limits on Governor Evers withdrawing from the multi-state federal lawsuits. There are limits on Attorney General Josh Call and some of the actions that he can take. It gives powers to state lawmakers to hire private lawyers if they want private lawyers to defend them in cases when laws are challenged. So this lawsuit contended that a number of those actions give lawmakers and the legislature an inordinate amount of power over the executive branch, and that really violates what the state constitution is seeking to do in terms of balance of power.
Yeah, so this one's more about balance of power. By Tuesday, Judge Frank Remington's ruling came out on that case. Where did he come down on the claims?
So he said that some of the lame duck laws did indeed do that, but not all of them.
Okay.
So unlike Judge Neese that struck down the entire lame duck session, all of the laws, all of the appointments, Judge Remington only struck down some. He struck down that limitation on the multi-state federal lawsuits. He said it's not right that the legislature can limit the governor in withdrawing from those. But he upheld some of the lame duck laws that limit the governor's ability to change federal waivers. Federal waivers were used by the Walker administration to do things like create work requirements for things like food stamps and Medicaid or drug testing for those things. If that law hadn't been changed during the lame duck session, Governor Evers could have come in and rolled back those requirements that Governor Walker put into place. With the lame duck laws in, and what Judge Remington upheld is that he'd have to go through the legislature to do that.
Let's bring in Steve now, joining us from Sun Prairie. Good morning, Steve.
Morning. So it appears to me, and this is a question, but, you know, here is a liberal judge from Madison that was elected only by basically Madison area residents, who basically just said that a legislator's term ends roughly, what, 45 days before the statutes call their term to end? Is that what I'm hearing?
So essentially, that's definitely an argument that Republican lawmakers have made, is that, you know, the extraordinary session was called when they were still in office. Obviously, the new governor hadn't been sworn in, the new legislature hadn't been sworn in, and they had the authority to do whatever they thought was necessary before that term ended. So that's definitely part of the argument. I think what the plaintiffs in these cases are arguing is that those actions were out of balance with what lawmakers should have been able to do within that time. So that's kind of the push and pull of these lawsuits as they move forward.
Laurel, going back to this balance of power lawsuit, how have Republicans responded to that? How did they respond to this ruling, and have they taken further action?
So they haven't officially taken action yet. I don't believe they've filed the appeal, but we do know that they plan to appeal Judge Frank Remington's ruling as well. So we'll see an appeal of that and potentially, like we did in the Nice case, a stay of Judge Remington's ruling.
Let's look at these 82 government Walker appointments in the last few days of his administration. They were confirmed during the lame duck session. What's happened regarding those positions while these rulings have come down?
So I think this is arguably the most confusing element as these lame duck lawsuits move forward, which is really saying something. Governor Walker did appoint these 82 individuals, and the Senate confirmed them during the lame duck session. These are positions that are mostly on state boards and commissions. Generally, those represent different professions in the state, help regulate them, et cetera. Basically, what happened is when all of those were invalidated by Judge Nice's ruling, Governor Evers moved to officially rescind all of those appointments and make all of those positions vacant so he could reappoint them. Where the confusing element comes in is the appeal of that decision and the ruling by the appellate court struck down Judge Nice's ruling, which Republican lawmakers say put all of the Walker appointees back in place. But Governor Evers doesn't agree with it. He says that the positions are still vacant.
So we're going step by step here through this lame duck litigation, where things stand with the powers of Governor Evers and Attorney General Josh Call. Laurel White is our guide. She is WPR's State Capitol reporter. You have a line at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute, maybe hear from you on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the lame duck session litigation, the four lawsuits brought against what happened in December in the legislature's extraordinary session, and where those suits stand today. Sorting through the courtroom motions, the rulings on this edition of the State Capitol Report, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald and Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said last week's appeals court ruling poses a, quote, constitutional crisis. What do you think? We're at 800-642-1234. Do you think the lame duck legislation should be left as is, or should it all be struck down? WPR State Capitol reporter Laurel White is our guide and to this lame duck litigation and where it all stands. Let's go to Don now, joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, Don.
Good morning. I think the lame duck legislation should all be struck down. This is just another example of overreach and on the part of Scott Walker, on behalf of his very wealthy Republican political donors. I would suspect that 90% of Wisconsinites don't benefit from any of that lame duck legislation. Working people don't benefit from this. It's just a favor to his donors and a favor to large corporations.
Don,
that's my opinion. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Don, I wanted to ask you, if you're still there, are you following these lawsuits carefully?
I'm sorry.
Are you following these lawsuits, Don? I'm wondering if you're watching
them.
Yeah. All right. Well, Don, thanks for the call. Laurel, it sounds like Don doesn't feel like any of this litigation would help Wisconsinites.
You know,
legislation.
Right. I think it's interesting because Republican lawmakers said during that lame duck session that they believed that these measures were so important and so helpful to the state economy for a variety of reasons. I'm thinking particularly about what we talked about earlier about those federal waivers and some of those work requirements and drug testing requirements. Those are things that they accomplished with Governor Walker in office. They thought that they would be in danger when Governor Evers came into office, and they believe that they are so important to the state that they wanted to offer some additional kind of insulation and protection around them. So I think that proponents of this lame duck session would argue just the opposite of what Don said, that certainly some of the things are very important and very helpful to Wisconsinites.
Well, let's motor through the final two lawsuits here. One is awaiting an appeal in federal court. Can you help us understand the early voting situation?
So this is a case that was ruled on in January. It's a federal challenge to the lame duck laws that focuses just on these restrictions on early voting. So what the lame duck session did in terms of early voting was say that the amount of time could be limited to just 2 weeks, I believe, before Election Day. The plaintiffs in this lawsuit appealed to a federal judge saying, we believe that this new lame duck legislation violates a previous decision that federal court had made about Wisconsin's voting laws. It was kind of a case that wrapped up voter ID, early voting, a variety of things related to election law in Wisconsin. The judge agreed with them in that case and said, yes, this does violate my earlier ruling. I'm going to put these new lame duck laws on hold. And that case is also pending an appeal. We haven't heard arguments in that federal appellate court yet.
And the Democratic Party of Wisconsin also brought a case against the lame duck session. What are they claiming?
So they are claiming another constitutional argument. They're saying that the lame duck laws violate the U.S. Constitution's guarantee clause. And that is a clause that says voters are entitled to a Republican with a lowercase r form of government, which means you vote for a certain number of people. Those people should be able to represent you, essentially saying that voters elected Tony Evers to do a certain set of tasks, and he is limited in his ability to do some of those things.
So have these rulings brought about confusion of what is and isn't law in the state of Wisconsin?
Mm-hmm. I think the confusing part about this is the fact that there are these two state cases. As we said, one of them struck down all of the lame duck laws, one struck down just some of them. And then one of those cases, one of those rulings, rather, has been put on hold by an appellate
court.
You need
a chart here.
And one hasn't.
A chart is needed.
Really, a pie chart would be great. Yeah. Where is the overlap between these two cases?
Right.
Because the overlap is really what's still on the books. The things that have been struck down by Judge Remington's ruling are, of course, off. Everything done by Judge Neese's ruling is off. But the things that Judge Remington said can't happen anymore, those things are still being limited by that court. So the Affordable Care Act lawsuit, the governor's power in that regard, things like that.
Very quickly, in about 10, 15 seconds here, what kind of movement will we see from any one of these lawsuits?
So we're going to be looking for that appeal in Judge Remington's case, where they file that appeal and whether or not that court issues a stay. My guess is that could happen this week. And then we're obviously going to be keeping an eye out for the arguments and the decisions from these higher courts.
Well, Laurel, thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Laurel White is Wisconsin Public Radio's state capitol reporter, co-host of the WPR Politics podcast. When voters head to the polls tomorrow in the small northern Wisconsin city of Barron, they'll be taking part in a historic election. As Rich Kramer reports, for the first time since Somali refugees began settling there 20 years ago, a Somali-born American is running for local office.
Let's all try saying that one time.
In a side room at the Barron Public Library, a group of five Somali refugees are studying for upcoming U.S. citizenship tests. They must memorize answers to 100 questions about U.S. history, the Constitution, and its separation of powers.
This is General Eisenhower.
Muhammad Farah moved to Barron in 2005 and obtained his citizenship the next year. He works at the Genio Turkey Store production plant in town, takes classes at UW-Eau Claire, Barron County, and volunteers as a translator for the citizenship classes. He says Somalis have become a part of the community, but until now they haven't sought public office. He says people have asked him about it.
How come you guys are absent? You know, you guys are a big community and you guys are absent from where decisions are made, and you guys should be part of it, and you know, at least we're taking that step.
That step was taken when two Somali candidates ran for an at-large city council seat in February.
No matter if they win or lose, what is important is, like, we have that ambition. And the local elections, usually Somalis don't pay attention, local stuff, you know, the general election is, you know, the one that they follow.
After a primary, 33-year-old Isak Mohammed became the first Somali-born candidate running in a city general election. Mohammed says a lack of housing and youth programs are two major issues for the Somali community and city as a whole.
I want to tell Barron community that they want to see us, that we can be involved in the government.
by starting the local government so that we can do a good job by helping this community, by helping the U.S. government.
Mohamud says his journey to Barron began in 2006 when he fled a bloody civil war in Somalia for a Ugandan refugee camp. He lived in that country for about 8 years before being resettled in the U.S. in 2013. Soon, he heard from friends there was plenty of work in Barron. His first job was at the Genio Turkey Store, and he's now a liaison for the Barron Area School District, where the number of black or African-American students has tripled to 164 since 2005. Mohamud is facing Paul Soley. He's a Barron native who worked on sewer projects in nearby Grantsburg and also did missionary work in Africa. When he moved back to Barron in 2013, he noticed a lack of participation in city government. He says he would be honored to work with the growing Somali population.
I'm sure that they are facing different issues than what the generations that have been here before. So those things will have to be faced. And I think that some of that is housing and child care.
The 2010 census showed nearly 9% of the city's 3,400 residents were of African descent. But a city administrator says that could have been an undercount. Despite some early tensions with longtime residents, the Somali community is a visible part of the city. Workers flowing into the Genio Turkey Store include women in hijabs. There are two mosques on the main road through the city's old downtown, and at least two Somali-owned businesses have opened there, including the Bushra Fashion Shop, run by Fadumo Sal Hassan. Hassan sells clothes, perfumes, beauty products, and an assortment of East African foods. She says having a Somali resident in local government could help raise awareness about issues facing the community, like immigration.
We would love to have someone who can be a liaison for this community in both ways. He would be a voice for anyone who speaks Somali or would represent in the city council.
No matter who wins the city council race, members of the Somali community in Barron say seeing one of their own running for office has already had an impact. Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And your go-to source for election news and information is WisconsinVote.org. There you can find your polling place, register to vote, view your sample ballot, and a lot more. The site is WisconsinVote.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.